that is Sweet Georgia Brown, featuring Jimmy Noone on the clarinet. What an opener there. Welcome to the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester. This episode, we're looking at the jazz instrument, the clarinet. And if you have a young person thinking about taking up the instrument, this is the time to bring him or her around and see what it can do, beyond the classical genre, of course. This is jazz, and Jimmy Noone knows how to do it. And notice after Noone's featherlight theme statement, the other frontline players, they take their turn, building up to the final star performance. Two choruses of phenomenal clarinet playing by the leader, Jimmy Noone. Those long runs and tricky octave jumps, with each note lightly tongued and technically extremely difficult, but he makes them sound quite effortless. The whole solo is a piece of swinging perfection, and that's how we kicked it off. From the earliest days in New Orleans until the end of the swing era, the clarinet was a dominant instrument in jazz. Its mellow tones flowed through the New Orleans ensembles, spiced the sound of big bands such as Benny Goodman's, and gave birth to myriad solo styles. Then suddenly, it was gone, blown away by the bebop revolution. The new jazz idiom simply did not suit the clarinet, and it is only recently that it has made a tentative comeback. And we're going to hear the whole gamut today as we feature the jazz clarinet, starting from, we have an early Benny Goodman piece from 1927. I think he was 19 years old. We're going to hear from Pee Wee Russell. We're going to hear from Barney Bagard, Johnny Dodds, and a few surprises as well at the end, as usual. The jazz band evolved outdoors in the warm, humid, pleasure-loving city of New Orleans. Bass, drums, guitar, or banjo created the beat, while trumpet, trombone, and a clarinet or two made and decorated the tune, with trumpet in the middle, trombone below, and the clarinet floating above. Clarinets were ideal for jazz. Flutes were too quiet, oboes too thin, and piccolos too shrill. But clarinets have a huge 3.5-octave range and can make themselves heard in most surroundings. There were plenty of clarinets about in the early days of jazz. After the Spanish-American War of 1898, large quantities of army surplus equipment were released for sale, including band instruments, and there are more clarinets than anything else in a military band. New Orleans already had a good supply of trained clarinetists because the French-speaking Creoles cultivated music as an accomplishment, and the clarinet was regarded as a legitimate concert instrument since it was taught at the Conservatoire in Paris. Now, the clarinet and the saxophone are technically very similar, and the first professional jazz saxophonists were usually clarinetists doubling up on the instrument. Early saxophone sections were often made up solely of clarinetists struggling gamely with unwieldy alto and tenor saxophones. But one who never succumbed to the lure of the saxophone was Jimmy Noone, who lived from 1895 to 1944. Like most leading New Orleans players, Noone moved to Chicago in the early 1920s, where his virtuosity terrified all the other jazz clarinetists. He continued to develop his remarkable technique and studied for a while with Franz Schupp for the Chicago Symphony. For a couple of years, he led a small band at the Apex Club, featuring altoist Joe Poston and pianist Earl Hines. The unusual lineup served very well as a showcase for the leader's brilliance. Poston was the straight man, providing a simple lead and allowing Noone to run endless rings around him. Now, early in 1928, Maurice Ravel visited the USA and called in at the Apex, and he was amazed and enchanted by Noone's playing and returned several times with a manuscript notebook in which he copied down some of the lines Noone was running against Hines's harmonies. Later that year, Ravel composed Bolero, which reveals a clear jazz influence, as do his final two piano concertos. The young Benny Goodman, another of Schupp's pupils, stood in awe of Noone, but also greatly admired the soulful, passionate playing of Johnny Dodds. His early style fluctuated between the two, sometimes forceful and rough-hewn, and sometimes smooth and flowing. Speaking of Johnny Dodds, let's listen to a little bit. We're going to go back to 1929 in Chicago. Listen to the Beale Street Washboard Band do a track called Piggly Wiggly. This is recorded in 1929 in Chicago. It features Herb Morand on trumpet, Johnny Dodds on clarinet, Frank Melrose on piano, Baby Dodds on washboard. Let's listen to Bill Street Washboard Band do Piggly Wiggly featuring Johnny Dodds on clarinet on the Jazz Treasury. That's Piggly Wiggly. Johnny Dodds. Johnny Dodds's approach to the clarinet was radically different from Nunes's, lacking his virtuosity, but making up for it in bite and drive, and a masterly ensemble sense. Listen to how closely he works alongside the trumpet here, never stumbling nor colliding. He loved the wild euphoria of washboard band music and possessed just the right mixture of discipline and abandon to bring it off to perfection. Now, you know, we did a whole show on Benny, a whole episode on Benny Goodman a while back, so if you want to hear that, go back and learn more about his life. But I like to play some of his music right now. And this is Benny Goodman back in 1927, once again in Chicago, and this is a great opportunity to compare Jimmy Nunes, Johnny Dodds, and Benny Goodman's styles all together in the first couple of minutes here. Let's listen to Benny Goodman do That's a Plenty, small group here, in fact, just a trio, with Benny Goodman on clarinet, Mel Zitzel on piano, and Bob Conselman on drums. Let's listen to That's a Plenty by Benny Goodman on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. That's a plenty. Benny Goodman, Chicago, 1927. The 18-year-old Benny Goodman, who could be heard on this track, was a long way from the velvet tone player of his mature years. This early number is fascinating because it shows his influence so clearly. There is something about Omar Simeon in his articulation, something of Johnny Dodds in his tone, and something of his Chicago contemporaries in his impatient manner. But strangely, very little of his hero, Jimmy Noon. Nevertheless, very impressive playing. And indeed, he went on to have a long, long career, especially with the big band. The whole south side of Chicago in the 1920s resembled a vast, informal jazz academy, where aspiring musicians sat at the feet of the New Orleans masters. Generally, the young white Chicago musicians were unschooled. They took up instruments because they loved jazz and more or less taught themselves. Many ended up with highly distinctive styles, the product of determination, unorthodox technique, and stubborn individuality. The most distinctive was Pee Wee Russell, who lived from 1906 to 1969. As the clarinet featured more and more as a virtuoso instrument in the hands of top band leaders such as Goodman and Artie Shaw, Pee-wee worked away in small Chicago-style bands, his style growing ever more oblique and unpredictable. Speaking of Pee-wee Russell, let's listen to one of his tracks, The Last Time I Saw Georgia, recorded in New York City in 1941. Again, trio, so you can really, really focus on the clarinet. Pee-wee Russell playing the clarinet, Joe Sullivan on piano, and Zuddy Singleton on the drums. Let's listen to Pee-wee Russell now. The Last Time I Saw Georgia on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. That's Pee-wee. Pee-wee Russell. Last time I saw Chicago. Pee-wee, playing the blues, is always a delight. A mixture of melancholy and exasperation. The title of the tune is a reference to a popular ballad of the time, The Last Time I Saw Paris. As bigger bands with brass, reed, and rhythm sections waxed in popularity, and the loose New Orleans-style ensemble waned, the clarinetist's role in jazz also changed. It was usually one member of the reed section whose specialty was solo clarinet. Memphis-born Buster Bailey, who lived from 1902 to 1967, filled this role with Fletcher Henderson for some years, and Barney Bagard, who lived from 1906 to 1980. In his long career, Bagard was prized by two of the greatest jazz composers, Jelly Roll Morton and Duke Ellington, and by Louis Armstrong as a key sideman. It is a curious fact that even though he is a major figure, none of Bagard's most important work was done as an independent bandleader. His role in Ellington's band between 1927 and 1942 was crucial. His pure Creole tone ran like a bright thread through the orchestral fabric. He is instantly recognized from the dark, woody texture of the lowest register to the soaring weightlessness of his high notes. His projection must have been quite remarkable, because the lower range of the clarinet can easily be lost in a big band. In Bagard's time with Ellington, instruments were hardly ever amplified, but never once does he appear to strain to be heard. Let's listen to some Barney Bagard then. And this is Barney Bagard playing with Jelly Roll Morton back in 1929, New York City, on the Jazz Treasury. Kinds of reasons have been put forward to explain why the clarinet virtually disappeared from contemporary jazz with the arrival of bebop, but the simplest is that it just did not sound right. Woody Herman played very little with his new bop-influenced band, The Second Herd, and Artie Shaw stayed well out of the whole affair. Saxophonists with big bands such as Herman's, Stan Kenton's, or Dizzy Gillespie's no longer had to double on clarinet. The very sound of it seemed to symbolize the past. Speaking of the past, that's why we're here, to listen in and see what we can learn. Let's listen in to Jimmy Dorsey. We're used to the Dorsey brothers being in big bands, but this is Jimmy Dorsey recorded in 1930 in London, St. Louis Blues. And this is Jimmy Dorsey on clarinet, Claude Ivey on piano, Alan Ferguson on guitar, and Spike Hughes on bass, Bill Hardy on drums. Jimmy Dorsey, St. Louis Blues.
You're listening to the Jazz Treasury Podcast with Rich Sylvester.
That's Jimmy Dorsey, St. Louis Blues. The clarinet flourished in the first half century of jazz, producing a wealth of major players as diverse as Jimmy Noon, Edmund Hall, Stan Hasselgaard, and Pee Wee Russell, then fell virtually overnight into the miscellaneous instrument category, along with the accordion and the xylophone. Its place as a leading solo instrument was taken by the tenor saxophone, and from the later 1950s by the flute, as a required double. It was not until the 1970s that new contemporary-styled clarinet specialists began to appear. And one of those people you might listen for, if you're new to jazz, is Eric Dolphy. Out to Lunch is a great CD. He plays bass clarinet. And then, of course, Eddie Daniels on clarinet is another one to look out for. But they've come back in some avant-garde genres. and also into flat-out traditional jazz genres. So the clarinets are still around. It just bebop was not suited for that. All right, let's listen. We have a final track to listen to here. And if you recall, in the early days of the clarinet and of jazz, there used to be two clarinetists playing in every band in New Orleans. And this was one track called High Society that they used to use as a tryout for a clarinet player who wanted to join a band. They'd play High Society to see if they could make the cut. But this is Kid Raina's Delta Jazz Band doing High Society, recorded in New Orleans, 1940, with Kid Raina on trumpet, Jim Robinson on trombone, Alphonse Pico and Louis Big Eye Nelson on clarinets, Willie Santiago on guitar, Albert Glennie on bass, and Joe Raina doing the drums. Let's go to New Orleans, 1940, and listen to Ted Raina's Delta Jazz Band doing High Society. There it is, Kid Raina, Kid Raina's Delta Jazz Band, High Society, 1940. The first recorded recreation of an early New Orleans band features the clarinets of Alphonse Pico and Louis Big Eye Nelson. Much was made of the great age of the players at this time, but Pico, the oldest, was only 62. Raina himself was a mere 42. All right, time to pack it up here. At the Jazz Treasury. Thank you so much for listening. Please feel free to go to iTunes and give us a like on Facebook. And in iTunes, you can go and give us a rate and a review. That helps the spread of jazz. so more people can listen in. Thank you so much to the kind private messages I've been getting on Facebook. I have fathers and sons listening to jazz. I have 25-year-olds saying, I've never listened to much jazz, and this is and in learning, and he's really appreciating it. Thank you so much for listening. Please spread the word. It's great music, you know, authentic American music. And by the way, all the information you're hearing right now comes from a publication called Jazz Greats, put out by the Marshall Cavendish Foundation. Consultant for Jazz Greats is Tony Russell, one of the leading jazz writers. If you know Tony Russell, thank him very much for this information. My name is Rich Sylvester. Oh, we have a little surprise coming up, so don't turn off yet, because we have some Christmas music for you, some Christmas jazz. So stay tuned. Let's have some recommended listening for those of you who are new to jazz or still haven't heard these things. How about Buddy DeFranco? Buddy DeFranco, Chip Off the Old Bop, 1992. Ken Papalowski, The Natural Touch, 1992. Eddie Daniels, Memos from Paradise. And Eric Dolphy, Alone Together. Give those a listen. You'll hear some good music, some good clarinet. And I mentioned Eric Dolphy, and I think I mentioned Eddie Daniels as well. Brilliant, brilliant clarinetists. Okay, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to be playing some Christmas music in a moment. And you'll be hearing, I think I put four tracks aside for Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone, and Happy New Year. You have Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters. Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And we'll listen to Benny Carter and his swing quintet doing Jingle Bells. And we'll listen to Artie Shaw. I didn't play Artie Shaw during the episode of the clarinet, but key figure in jazz clarinet is Artie Shaw. And we'll listen to Artie Shaw and his orchestra when winter comes. And then finally, John Kelly Sextet, Bounce of the Sugar Plum Fairy.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why.
Why?
Santa Claus is coming to town, gather round. He's making a list, checking it twice, he's gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're away.
He knows if you've been bad or good,
so be good for goodness sake. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
With little tin horns and little toy drums, Rudy toot toots and rum-a-tum-tums, Santa Claus is coming to town. Curly head dolls, a toddle and coo, elephant boats and kitty cars too. Santa Claus is coming to town.
The kids and girls in Boyland will have a jubilee. They're gonna build a toyland town all around the Christmas dream.
You better watch out.
You better not cry.
You better not pout.
I'm a-telling you why.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. You better watch out.
You better not cry.
You better not pout.
I'm telling you why.
Santa Claus is coming to town. You better watch out.
You better not cry.
You better not pout.
I'm telling you why.
Santa Claus is coming.
You mean the big fat man with the long white beard.
He's coming to town.
Thank you. The sun will shine in the summer, and I'll be fine in the summer. But then I gotta have you to cuddle up to when winter comes. It's nice and warm in the summer, I'll be in form in the summer. But then I've gotta have you to cuddle up to when winter comes. All summer I'll be playing out on a tennis court, but in the winter, just like the groundhog, I'll turn into an indoor sport. I'll pull an oar in the summer and hug the shore in the summer. But then I gotta have you to cuddle up to when winter comes. Thank you.
right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening in. Rich Sylvester signing off. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thank you for your listening and sharing. Next time on the Jazz Treasury, we still have a few left. We listen to Roy Eldridge. Oh, that name sounds familiar. Eat trumpet, sleep trumpet, drink trumpet. It could have been Roy Eldridge's motto. It was certainly why his fellow musicians called him Little Jazz. Intense, creative, and fiercely competitive, Eldridge was the outstanding jazz trumpeter between Louis Armstrong and Dizzy Gillespie. And we'll listen to some of the music, and we'll learn about the life of Roy Eldridge next time. Once again, please feel free to go to our Facebook page, give us a like, give us a comment, suggest things we should listen to. Your participation is appreciated. And thank you so much for listening. And until next time, enjoy the jazz.